End of the day. I know it's after lunch. I'm assuming you're a little bit sleepy as well. I had the food coma set in about an hour or two ago, so I will do my best to try to change a tone up and down. If I had good jokes, I would tell them. But welcome to EXL325. It's a little hard to make some of the jokes around voice improvements. I haven't mastered the art of telling good jokes around some of the content that we have in here yet. So this presentation will cover the Link voice changes in 2013. And towards the end of that, we've got our sponsor. For those of you who won prizes, Plantronics has been providing us with some giveaways. We tried the random approach for this session, so Don's going to give a couple slides showing their current products, and we've got some more Plantronics giveaways for you at the end of the session as well. So if you haven't seen this slide yet, be forewarned, all content subject to change. We haven't shipped the software yet, so there is a chance that anything we're saying in these slides could be different by the time we go to general availability. So we're giving you the best information that we have available for public consumption now. You're actually one of the first areas around the world to see Link 2013 guidance as well as Exchange 2013 guidance. If you've been to Scott Schnoll's sessions, he's been pretty excited about being first to release a lot of the guidance there around Exchange 2013, and we're also pleased to welcome you to the Link 2013 capabilities. This is the quick bullet list of what's new in Link Voice. The first 5-10 minutes or so in the session will cover the three cloud scenarios. There's Link Online, Link Hybrid, and Link Server. I will kind of explain the differences of what works between each one of those three scenarios, and then a high-level overview of how signaling and media transport flow for those three capabilities for Link itself. I will talk a little bit about some of the telephony changes. Now, we've added support, as we mentioned, for IPv6. We'll cover more of that in the enterprise networking session tomorrow afternoon with Vakhtang. We've added capabilities around something called session management. So we've got a couple slides in here that describes what that is. If you have a telecom background, you're probably wondering, wow, it finally came to Link. I see a couple of thumbs up in the audience there. But as we continue to add add features around enterprise voice, we continue to make Link that concept of a software-style PBX that organizations can run. Along with that, we also have the concept of what we're saying is M-to-N mediation servers to gateways. We show you some of the changes around that helps with both availability as well as some of your options for voice routing and designating who can call which lines and which gateways and planning the essential paths for user calls to flow in the organization. We also have had a lot of requests around delegation changes, so we're pleased to announce, and we'll show you a shortcoming here towards the end of the deck. Some of those changes around delegates and the delegate manager scenario for Link 2013. We also have more delegation capabilities, so we'll talk a little bit about the concept of RBAC and this new concept of a response group manager role, allowing you to sort of delegate or push back the management of some of these response groups out into the business unit itself. And then finally, there's some content around per-call authorization, things around P-asserted identity and some of the other characteristics or attributes of a call as a call leaves Link and goes off into the gateway IP-PBX or the PSTN environment. So, like we said, the first 10, 15 minutes, we'll spend a little bit covering the cloud capabilities. So the first one is Link Online, Link Hybrid, and Link Server. Our goal in providing software at Microsoft is to give you a choice. You can either run software via, or I guess rent software from us, right? You can get it via the Office 365 subscription model, where we manage and operate the software itself. You can buy the same software from us and run that on-premises, which has some more capabilities, but you have to have the management and operations of that under control. And then we have the third option, which is new here for Link 2013, called Link Hybrid. So we'll explain some of the capabilities and choices around that. First thing we want you to see is that the capabilities for the services are not equal to each other. The one with the most capabilities is Link Server on-prem. This is where you buy the software from us. You're able to use all the features and/or capabilities. We don't block that scenarios or block those capabilities in that on-premise server scenario. When we look at Link Online or Link Online Dedicated, it's a subset of that, and that's as we're starting to add those capabilities to our cloud model. We're providing some basic features there first. We'll explain some of the challenges as we walk forward through that as to why those aren't all there yet, for example. And then the option around hybrid kind of gives you a little bit of both. We'll manage some of the services in the online world. You'll manage some of the services on your on-premises infrastructure, and we have some capabilities around that. So the first one, and not available yet in Australia, so I'm going to spend just a quick overview of it, which is the link-to-phone capabilities. For the first time, starting earlier this year, we've announced the capability to provide phone devices connecting directly back to an Office 365-enabled user. So this is a user who's enabled for Link instant messaging and conferencing and now can get an Aerie-style phone, a Link soft phone, right, on essentially place and receive phone calls as an end user with no on-premises software component required. That phone can be plugged in on your corporate network. That phone can be plugged into the internet, right? We'll handle the signaling and media flow. They have a phone number that can be reached. They have a phone number that they can dial out on, and they have basic call capabilities. Another way to look at this is very similar to like an analog phone line, right? We're sending a cord out for them that they can kind of plug in anywhere. They have that basic call capabilities. Some advanced features, so we include delegation and team calling, for example, with link-to-phone capabilities, but not some of the other aspects such as response groups or enhanced 911 or maybe more importantly, the ability to use your local PSTN carrier for this option, right? So we've got a subset of people who have this capability around link online or link to phone. Today, that subset is one carrier called Jaja. We've got quite a few vendors going through the certification pipeline today. We'll continue to announce additional phone carriers or partners that provide that. But in essence, you license Office 365. We have a contract with an organization called Jaja that prevents us from being the telecommunications billing and vendor, which means that we are not a telco, right? So you can see kind of the difference between Office 365 providing the data capabilities, Jaja providing the phone capabilities. We will pass signaling and media handling off to them, and they will be that bridge between your on-premise or your internet-connected voice user and that cloud infrastructure and Link Online. Call flow is relatively straightforward. A Link Online user calling another Link Online user. User sends their signaling information off to the cloud, right? That, in essence, is their Link Server 2013 pool. That signaling knows where the other online user is. Media is going to stay local as long as those two endpoints can talk to each other. If there's a firewall or something between them, we will bounce that media off of the edge server, doing a stun or turn approach, right, depending on whether or not that firewall has a NAT capability that can be negotiated. So media flow is not flowing through the Office 365 environment in that peer-to-peer calling scenario. Another one is what about incoming and outgoing calls, right? So in this case, a PSTN user is going to call a Link Online user. PSTN user calls the user. That number is routed to our telecommunications provider, Jaja, who's managing the phone numbers associated with that service. Signaling hits Link Online, signals the Link Online user. Media path will be directly from that Link client to that PSTN partner, right? So today we have Jaja. Tomorrow, more than that as additional partners go through and become certified. So that's the essence of how we do voice in the cloud for our Link Online users. Additionally, if you happen to have voicemail, right? So you've also got, for example, Exchange Online as part of Office 365. Signaling will come into Link Online. If the Link user does not pick up the handset or answer the call, or the Link user is offline, Link Online will redirect that call to Exchange Online. Media will flow from Jaja through to Exchange Online, and the user can receive a voicemail in Exchange UM. So relatively straightforward. We're not seeing any advanced or esoteric call handling capabilities, and essentially we're outsourcing that media and billing component from Office 365 to a partner who then handles the billing aspect and the call termination aspect for you. The one case where media does flow into Office 365 is a user in a conference. And when we have a conference, we have the concept of an MCU. Something has to mix the audio, essentially. That audio mixer is a Link AV MCU running in Office 365. So whenever we have users join a meeting or join a conference call, for example, that call is going to flow into Office 365 as well. So Link Online users will have both their signaling and media flowing back to one of those Link AV MCUs in Office 365. Devices supported. We're happy to announce that it's all Link Airy style phones. So if you have invested in the Airy style phones released with Link 2010, we are updating the firmware on that so that those devices can talk to Link Online, Link Hybrid, and Link Server on-prem. No dramatic changes in the feature set. The capabilities we did with Link 2010 turn out to be very much the typical use case scenarios. Being able to browse through your contacts list, looking through your calendar, one-click meeting join, and the traditional telephone dial pad. It's almost kind of humorous, right? The change in the software update just removes 2010 from the title. We envision that Link Airy style phone as being that phone firmware that's required to connect to Link. It will work across all three of our on-prem, hybrid, and cloud versions. If you happen to be running an Office 365, we run the device update process for you, so it will continue to get the latest firmware and have the latest build of Link on it, ensuring it will continue to connect and operate or interoperate with your Link environment. The one type of phone, another constraint, right, we mentioned in the middle one, is this is for the Airy style phones only, not for the common area phones. So this is just a user and an extension or a phone number, and that's enabled for voice. They can plug that phone in, that Airy style phone, right, or use their Link soft phone with a headset, for example, as their device that they use to interoperate with Link Online. So, any question? Provisioning workflow, relatively straightforward. Essentially, you activate users on the Link Online portal. We'll show you what those pages look like in a couple of slides. But essentially allows you to go and provision users, assign them one of the predefined numbers you receive from Jaja. So they're going to give you a list of phone numbers for your end users. And you go in and define the phone numbers per user. Once you've done that, we do the back-end work of assigning the SIP URI field and all the other technical infrastructure required to route and place calls from a Link server perspective. If you have Exchange UM and the Exchange UM integration, you'll also need to define your auto attendant and subscriber access numbers for people who want to dial in to check their voicemail. So, relatively straightforward configuration. If we take a look, right, and the Link Administration Center, you're going to hit the drop-down. Drop-down has one choice today. We envision that expanding over time, right? But and one region as well, as we point out, right? But you pick the provider. There are going to be some access numbers that they grant you. You're able to go ahead and assign those access numbers to your end users in the organization. So you have some users, right? Define what their office phone number is. We'll go ahead on the back end and provision that user with that phone number. They can then go ahead and sign into the device, sign into the Link. They're able to place and receive calls using the signaling and media path we showed you a couple of slides ago. Question? No comment yet at this time. I don't know what I'm authorized to disclose on that, so I'm going to leave that one open. I'll see if I can find out more before tomorrow afternoon. So, good question. Second option is what we call Link Hybrid. So Link Hybrid says, wow, this Link on, you know, we want to try the cloud. We're interested. We have a pilot or some users on Office 365, but there's a lot of constraints, right? We saw a lot of missing features essentially on that list between what Link to phone or our Link Online capabilities are with respect to voice today. So the hybrid scenario says, all right, let's put instant messaging and conferencing on Office 365. But let's leverage your existing relationships with carriers. You might have long-term contracts. You might have some negotiated rates. Maybe they provide some special services for you. You probably have some on-premise telecommunications gear as well, a PABX, maybe some IP telephony systems, other investments that you have. Link Hybrid allows us to place some Link server infrastructure on-premises and will reroute all voice activity to your on-prem environment. At that point, you have the same Link voice interop story you have with Link server. We support the basic Link functionality in a hybrid environment because our voice connection is no longer cloud-based. It's you have some PRIs coming inbound to a PABX. You might have a SIP trunk coming into an SBC. You've got a Link server in there. You'll route some numbers to Link, some numbers to your existing PBX users, and you're very familiar with this construct and flow. You do require some Link server infrastructure deployed on-prem, so you'll have a Link server pool there, could be standard edition or enterprise edition. It's not relevant in this case, for example. But that allows us then to route the signaling for voice traffic locally and ensure that you're using your existing telecommunications gear, carrier relationships, right, everything else. So could be also a subset. We also, if you notice the underlink hybrid, we're also happy to announce something called split domain. So link hybrid itself is referring to the capability of IM in presence and conferencing in Office 365 voice on-prem. Link split domain says some IM presence and conferencing and or voice local, some IM conferencing and or voice Office 365. So split domain allows us to take a single SIP namespace and have some of your users online and some of your users on-prem. For the users who are on-prem, it's a full link on-prem experience. For the link users who are online, they would be either pure online, IM presence and conferencing, or maybe online with hybrid voice, meaning that IM and conferencing is online and voice is running in that on-prem environment. So just to draw some clarification, right, hybrid is just referring to the concept of voice on-premises, IM and conferencing off in the cloud. Hybrid voice scenarios, we have a link online user running on-prem. We have a link server on-prem, but we also have that user activated as a link hybrid user. Signaling is always going to flow through Office 365. Their default login pool and credentials, or not credentials, but their default pool and their default signaling path is going to be off in Office 365. When Office 365 realizes the user is placing an audio call, and we see that the little checkbox for hybrid is checked, we pass the signaling back down to your link server on-prem. It says, ah, I know the path to send audio out, right? I'll send that signaling off to the next hop, in this case an IP PBX. Media, we'll try to keep local, right? So we support media bypass here. We'll send it straight to the IP PBX. If we didn't support media bypass, we would send media to the link server on-prem mediation service. It would then send the media to the IP PBX and off onto the PSTN. So hybrid solution gives you this choice of keeping your existing telephony gear on-prem, your carrier relationships, but having that test the waters with the cloud running instant messaging and conferencing off in Office 365. What's required? We mentioned already that we need a link pool, so that could be a standard edition or enterprise edition server. We need an edge server if we want external clients to be able to connect. That allows that, as well as the ICE stun and turn or the firewall transversal and negotiation capabilities in edge. It also is going to be our connectivity between our on-premise pool and link online. So edge is kind of our intermediary between online and on-prem, as well as our external users who are coming inbound for instant messaging, conferencing, and or voice. The mediation server, it can be co-located on your front ends, or we can break out that mediation server to a dedicated mediation server role. We do see that sometimes in a SIP trunking scenario. And some sort of on-premise PSTN infrastructure. This is your traditional gateway, IP PBX, or a SIP trunk, which is essentially our connectivity out to the outside world for voice. So in the hybrid world, you manage the carrier and the voice relationship. Microsoft manages the instant messaging and the conferencing capabilities. We pass signaling back locally for that on-premises infrastructure. One caveat, when the user first signs in, we'll get a DNS registration locally. That DNS registration will point them to your local link server pool. On that initial sign into the pool will detect that the user is configured for on-prem, for hybrid voice. Once we know they're configured for hybrid voice, we redirect them out to link online. Signaling path at that point will flow out through Edge to link online. User is able to register successfully, sign into their client, and have their contact list and conferencing and or audio capabilities lit up. When they go to we have an inbound call from the PSTN. Signaling flows into our PSTN connectivity, right? IP PBX, a gateway, a SIP trunk. Next hop says, that number is associated with a link user. Sends a signaling down to our front-end server or mediation if the mediation service is broken out. Mediation service says, I know my next hop for this. User is a hybrid user. Send it off to Edge to Link Online. Link Online knows the registration endpoint for that user. Rings the phone. User's available or answers the call. With media bypass, direct media there. No media bypass. Media flows to the pool up to the user. So, questions? Got the hybrid approach. Outgoing calls, similar process. User registers off to Office 365, places the call. Signaling flows to Office 365, comes back to our on-prem Link 2013 server. Here we can apply our policies, right, in terms of restrictions and authorizations around who can call where, in association with our dial plan. If the user is authorized to make the call, we will route that call to a gateway the user is allowed to call, send the signaling there. Media path, of course, will follow media bypass, assuming our next hop supports media bypass. So adding Link server on-prem gives you that additional capability around, this one we do know and can say, right, in terms of the question, your policy enforcement will come for sure with Link server on-prem, to be determined in terms of the pure IP phone or link to phone capabilities with Office 365. Yes. Yes. Between edge to link online is over the internet. And all via TLS, right? So we have public certificates on Office 365. You'll have a certificate on your... So question was, if you didn't hear in the back, what is the connection method between that edge server and the Office 365 service? That connection method is the public internet. So we are using TLS on both sides with encryption to encrypt both the signaling and the media path from clients sending their signaling out as well as inbound calls coming in. Yes? Another question is your local pool a backup pool for Link Online? No, Link Online has its own concept of primary and backup registrars, and so your IM and conferencing capabilities are held there. It's just diverting voice traffic or voice signaling and voice traffic to your local on-premises infrastructure. If you lost your edge server or your internet connectivity, you would lose instant messaging and conferencing for any users inside of the network. Where the edge server translates them forward to outside.
What about
voice services would also, my understanding today is voice servers also are down because your registrar endpoint is your Office 365, and so therefore there's a dependency on both edge and, the question, if you didn't hear it right, what happens if you lose edge services? You are down effectively because you've lost your connection to your registrar endpoints, which is the Office 365 environment. Once your registrar is unavailable, you don't have a path to send your signaling into that local environment.
Does the edge server and the front end need to be co-located? Could
the edge and the front end be co-located?
Do they have to be co-located? In other words, could one component like the edge be on, for example, a utility box in the cloud, as in a corporate cloud, and the rest of the infrastructure on-prem?
So I'm trying to figure out when you say, you mean running on like an Amazon Web Services kind of VM farm or something? Or like another, you need to have IP connectivity between your front end pool and your edge pool, similarly to what you'd have for IP connectivity and Link server on-prem. And so if you can reach on the appropriate ports from your front end pool to edge, we don't really care which network that's residing on, right? We just say that the edge can't be a member of your corporate or production 80 forest. It could be a member of a perimeter forest. It's typically placed out in the perimeter network. That perimeter network does not have to be on the same subnet, same location, same geographical region as that front-end server pool. So say the rules for applying or designing the topology here would be the same as for designing the topology for Link server on-prem. Yes? Yes. So split domain. Yep. Nope. So the next question is split domain. Split domain takes us another step farther in saying that instead of all of our users registering here for IM presence and conferencing, we're going to have some registering here for IM and conferencing, some registering here for IM and conferencing, but they're going to have the same SIP domain and namespace. And so the users who register locally, all the same local rules apply, right? You can have two pools, pool level failover, inter-site failover, multiple paths, multiple servers per pool. Essentially, for the users who are on-prem, they're not even aware that some of the user, the Office 365 has no dependency for their normal day-to-day operation. Correct. That would be a one way would be the split domain hybrid scenario, which brings some users all on-prem. Or another method, right? So let's quick overview, right, of the hybrid solution. Inbound calls going to come in through your existing carrier relationship today to your on-premises infrastructure. That could be, like we said, SIP trunk, PSTN gateway, IP PBX, route through to the link pool that you have on-premises. Signaling will flow out then to the cloud, find the endpoints, and find the user. All the users logged in endpoints that are eligible for voice will ring. So if they have any computers that have microphones and speakers, right, or any soft phones or hard phones that are plugged in, all those endpoints will ring. First one to answer the call is the one that will establish the media path and take that call. We do support the concept of Exchange UM. We will reroute the call to Exchange UM either in the cloud and potentially, not sure yet, right, the concept of on-prem. So if you had Exchange UM on-prem. Outbound call, user starts a call. We already kind of walked through the call flow, but signaling will hit Office 365, redirect it back to that pool on-prem. From the pool on-prem, send the signaling out to your path of the PSTN. Media path will stay local to that environment. Configuration, we manage that through a combination of both the Link Server Control Panel, Office 365 Control Panel, and PowerShell. The cloud settings come in through PowerShell. Link Server Control Panel allows you to manage that on-premise pool and edge server deployment inside of your environment. Things like call detail records are going to be forwarded to that pool that you have on-premises, and that's going to be stored in a SQL database that you've got associated with that front-end server pool. So you're still being able to capture all of your call detail records and the associated metrics and statistics around calls that come through with that monitoring or the call detail record solution from the devices that send it off to those front ends. So the other option, right, if you wanted that pool level resilience, split domain is one, so you have some of the users who are on-prem, or run all the users on-prem. The rest of the session is focused on the voice changes around Link Server on-prem. So we'll spend the next probably 20, 30 minutes or so walking through the on-prem philosophy and design principles that took us from Link Server 2010 to 2013, and at a high level what some of these technical changes are. First one's right. We wanted to have some capabilities around networking and providing additional resilience for connections between mediation servers and gateways. We'll show a little bit more about this M-to-N relationship that we've referred to going back a couple slides back. We also wanted to have a better interop story, so you're going to see some more capabilities with Link around interoperating with on-premises PBX, gateways, SIP trunks, for example, things such as session management, as well as some changes around the way that we flow media and media routing in an organization. In terms of deployment and management and operations, you still have the concept of a single dial plan. All of the Link devices, whether it be your Link server pools, survivable branch appliances, survivable branch servers, for example, are all managed centrally. That information is pushed out via the CMS to all those devices. They're aware of it, and you're not ever going to individual components in the Link environment to change or modify some of those dial plans, authorization, or access. Additionally, we added some changes around policies for calling and authorizing users for different routes and gateways that they can have. We'll talk about that and some of the trunk capabilities coming up later. Link server, in terms of signaling and routing, let's go through these relatively quickly because we don't have substantial changes here from 2010. You've got internal users will send their signaling right off to their front-end pool. Media flow is going to be established either to your IP PBX, your gateway, or to your SIP trunking environment, or if they're talking to people externally through your edge server out to those external users. So looking at the five R's, kind of what's new, right? The first one's around routing. We have some delegate changes that we'll talk to in a moment. Concepts of session management, or allowing Link essentially to be the intersection for call routing and access versus a destination, is what we had in Link 2010 and prior. This concept of trunking, which we're going to add more detail on that M-to-N gateway to mediation service relationship, as well as a key one called calling number translation. So we had the ability to do called number translation and inbound number translation in Link Server 2010. We're now able to pass calling party number translation when calls exit link off towards the gateway or PSTN for any local dialing habits or restrictions that may be in place at the point where that call egresses your link environment. Reporting, we'll cover some of the changes around the call detail records or the monitoring server role in link. Response group management, the concept here is we now can delegate out a response group administrator. So rather than having all response groups managed by the central link team, we're able to push that out to someone in that business or the business unit who can manage the workflow, agents, and agent groups. And we talked a little bit about restrictions and reliability. We'll show some components of that as we go forward. So the first one is around delegates and how we handle delegate routing. The change here is that we've taken the concept of allowing a delegate to do simul-ring to their mobile devices as well. We didn't have this in Link 2010, and the concern at the time was we don't want calls that are going in for the manager or the boss to hit the secretary or the admin assistant's cell phone personal voicemail, right? So if the delegate sets up simul-ring or call forwarding to their cell phone and then wanders into an area out of coverage or their battery dies, that's the first device that's going to pick up the call, right? Because it's the shortest time to answer on that one. And so we put some logic, essentially a too soon timer, that says if one of those endpoints answers, or specifically the delegate's endpoint, right, answers in a too soon period, you can define kind of what that period is, we won't take that answer device as one of the official answering endpoints. It's not me. Is that a fire alarm? Oh. I'm looking for guidance. What do we do with that? What do we do with this scenario? Is this a real fire alarm? Is that nobody else is out there? There are event folks are looking into it. Let's see what happens. Wait. If I see some smoke. Well, now we've gotten past the afternoon doldrums, right, and the food coma from lunch. Wasn't planned by me, but pardon? Getting confirmation, excellent. We'll know in a moment. Thank you for standing by. Everyone's woken up now. No more. I know. Like, that sounds like a. That is a fire alarm. I thought maybe it was the next room over had some demo or something going off for a moment. A new ringtone, right? They are setting up for the attendee party already in that back hallway, so my assumption is the catering folks have set off one of the smoke detectors, but now we'll hope that's what it is and not a real emergency. Pardon? Yeah, exactly. I had a buddy in Chicago who's in the fire department, calls it a pot of meat. They get calls on a lot of pot of meats where someone put the pot of meat in the oven or whatever, forgot about it, and smoke billowing out, right? You go in, it's just a pot of meat. But 20 folks get called. You never know, right? When they always respond. Pardon? On the exchange side, yes. Not on the link side. I attend on the link side. I attend on the link side, I was saying. So I went for OCS R2, and in June, I went through for Link 2010. So actually, starting this fall, 2013, it'll be available. Time to update again, right? Are you? Oh, awesome. It's tedious, but if you put the time in, right, it's not that bad. So it's really just more of a making sure you clear your three-week period, read up, as much as you can prior, and just kind of steel yourself up for lower sleep and long, long days. I mean, it's just PowerPoint all day. Well, two-thirds of the day, and you got about a third of it sitting and looking at pressure change in one of the rooms set off the alarm. So we have a false alarm, I'm assuming that means, which means we are not required to exit the building. All right. So continue with the just talk louder. I'll try. Pardon? But yes, okay, no problem. I'm happy to give you any hints. All right. Summary on the too soon timer. We'll try to push through, otherwise we're pushing up into the next session, right? Houston Timer just says, we're not going to take the diverted call that goes to the admin assistant's cell phone voicemail, right, whoever she sent that simul ring to, hoping then that that call would be picked up by the manager or the manager's voicemail, which is where we'd expect that call path to go. So you have the option to turn this on. The delegates now have the option then, once enabled, to go ahead and have call forwarding or simul ring so that they can take or manage the calls without being chained to the desk. A lot of folks were asking for this in the last couple versions of the product. The question is, does this support call forwarding to a team call from here? I don't know on that one. I believe the normal call forwarding and simul ring rules apply. So if you can simul ring to a team call, you'd be able to divert it to that. You just have to check your too soon timer to see if the wrong voicemail will pick up. The other capability we're happy to announce is the concept of session management. So session management, like we said, allows Link to be the intersection versus a destination, meaning essentially we can have, rather than calls terminating at Link and then going to a Link endpoint, calls can flow through Link to another non-Link device. This means that if we have an IP PBX, Link and an IP PBX, the IP PBX can call the other PBX, but we can route the call through Link, or one of those endpoints being the PSTN, for example. It's all built into Link. We use the same concepts and constructs inside of Link. We have the capability for doing this concept of media bypass between those IP PBXs and the PSTN, for example. We'll show you a couple slides which will walk through what the signaling and media path will look like. This includes all the associated or typical trunk level authorizations. We will still capture things like call detail records and forward that on to provide that troubleshooting capability when you see issues related to voice over IP in your environment. So essentially what this enables, incoming calls from a PSTN terminating on a PBX transiting through Link, or outgoing calls from a PBX to the PSTN transiting through Link, or PBX to PBX transiting through Link. Looking at how this works, here we have an example of a Link environment, right? We've got a couple mediation servers and a front-end pool, an IP PBX on each side. We define the trunk relationships between Link and those IP PBXs. At that point, calls can then route from the IP PBX via that trunk through Link to the other endpoint. Signaling will flow through Link. We have support for media bypass on those trunk configurations to allow the media itself to flow directly from the IP PBX to the IP PBX. This reduces the load, obviously, on Link and or any potential transcoding that may have been applied as the call would flow through Link itself. Here's another example showing an IP PBX out to the PSTN. So PSTN goes to a gateway. Gateway has a trunk relationship with Link. Link has another trunk established to the IP PBX. Signaling flows through Link. Media path is going to be IP PBX directly off to that gateway out to the PSTN. Question?
Is the bandwidth control set into call admission control?
Yes. Question is, do we still look at policies such as call admission control or bandwidth policies when defining these trunks? The answer is yes. Anything that's flowing through Link is going to follow all of our normal Link rules around routing, call admission control, authorization, etc. One of the, I have to stop and think about this. My memory is fading a little bit this afternoon. One of the things we don't support today with Link and the concept of session management is the ability to do it on a per endpoint basis from the existing PBXs. So some session management solutions will allow you to say that PBX extensions 1,000 through 3,000 can dial through Link. 4,000 cannot dial through Link, right, for example. You can kind of simulate this by creating multiple trunks from the PBX and then defining which extensions go through which trunk. But if we have a single trunk from Link to that IP PBX, we're not going to be able to establish or apply policies that say certain numbers on the PBX can flow through and others cannot. We'll flow through the anything that's allowed to use the trunk coming into Link will have the Link policies associated with that trunk, not inside of the trunk or an intra-trunk policy capability. The other change, similar to this, that kind of assists both with session management as well as resilience, is the concept of flexible trunking. With OCS 2007, we had the capability to have a one-to-one mediation service to gateway relationship This definitely constrains our routing capabilities as well as our resilience options, right? It becomes much more costly to provide that level of availability. In Link 2010, we went to a one-to-N relationship, meaning that a mediation server could talk to multiple gateways, and we defined that route or that path at the gateway level. So you defined a gateway in the organization. When you defined your route, you associated the route with a gateway, and it would choose the appropriate mediation server to flow through. In Link 2013, we give you the concept of defining trunks. So trunks now allow us to have multiple or M-to-N relationships between any given mediation server and any given gateway inside of the organization. This greatly facilitates our user dialing patterns and paths for voice routing in the organization. It also provides additional levels of resilience. An inbound call coming in from the gateway will try to reach mediation server 1. If it's not available, can now try mediation server 2. We don't have to fail the call and have it come in through a different gateway from that PSTN provider. So a couple of options, right? One, for the inbound calls coming into Link, we have multiple paths back to the mediation server. And two, for the calls egressing Link to the gateways, we can define that on a per trunk basis with different policies around that, providing more flexibility for that routing option. Everything still is encrypted with TLS and secure RTP between those mediation servers and the I hear the fire alarms popping up like that again. It's a little offsetting. It gets louder and quieter. I don't know the... it is fading in and out. That's not me, right? Sorry. My ears are red now. So the point here, right, flexible trunking, or this concept of end-to-end, not only provides us the resiliency coming in from the gateways, but defining a route that has a path going to a trunk versus a specific gateway gives us additional flexibility. Now we can define our routing logic and our call authorization procedures with much more granularity, ensuring that some users have maybe multiple paths to different gateways, other users have only a single route or a single trunk associated with that specific gateway. This concept applies and is aware in the what we call the outbound routing component in Link, or the process in Link server that essentially is choosing what that egress voice path will be when a user dials a number. We want that call to transit from Link off to that gateway or PSTN connection. IP, PBX, and trunks internetworking. This concept applies not just for gateways, right, but also to the IP, PBX capabilities. The configurations on this we can define a couple different ways, either globally, meaning that all the trunks will have the same config, or we can start to apply specific policies and settings per trunk. And so as we define these routes, leaving Link or having the pass leave Link, right, when we have different policies on these trunks, that's giving us that granularity option for calls that will egress the Link environment out into that IP PBX or the PSTN. Dial plans, as we say, can now be scoped down to trunk as well. We're no longer scoping that down to a specific gateway, allowing us to have different policies and or different number manipulation patterns, for example, for the different calls that will egress the Link environment. The final one is around calling number translation. So as we said before, we can do called number translation via normalization rules. So as we enter a dialing pattern as an end user in our soft phone or hard phone, we'll translate that number to E164 typically in a Link environment or the E164 format. However, when the call egresses Link, there's cases where we need to modify the called number. And so in Link 2010, we provided you the capability to modify that dialed number to, for example, take off the plus and add a 011, or maybe add the local dialing prefix or dialing pattern for that local gateway that the call was egressing at. What we didn't have was the ability to modify the calling number or the source number. And so with Link 2013, you now have the ability to modify both the called number as well as the calling number when the call is leaving the system. We've seen some gateways or countries where the calling number has to follow a certain format. And until it follows that format, it's not accepted, for example, by the carrier or the PSTN provider. Question?
With those, the calling number presentation, doesn't seem to work with application endpoints. There's an option in the gateway to present the gateway number. It doesn't seem to follow from an application
I'm missing what you're saying by application endpoint. Oh, all right. We'll take that one separately. Sorry. Where was I? Okay, so the benefit here, right, is for countries or locations or gateway providers that require both the calling and the called number to be modified, to be transmitted out of link, you now have the capability of modifying both of those numbers as that call exits the trunk, leaving that mediation server. Here's an example kind of showing it. We'll show you a couple here, right? First one, in the voice policy itself, we have the concept of normalization rules. In that case, we're going to do a called number translation and add the 011, for example. It hits a PSTN usage that calls out for the that allows international, right? So we see that that's an international call. At that point, we understand that when we're leaving that trunk, we have to remove the plus, for example, before sending the number off to the gateway. That calling number translation is the change, or the net new change, in Link Server 2013. It eventually hits the route. The route is Redmond International. That route, as we can see, is associated now with a trunk, not with a specific gateway. And so that trunk, in this case, happens to point to the Redmond gateway, call will egress the network, hit the Redmond gateway, but not have the plus on it as it arrives at the gateway itself. Same concept applies in the area of session management. So in this case, we've got a PBX user calling the gateway, right? PBX user calls or dials the pattern. We can do called number translation on the inbound trunk, so essentially changing the dialed number as that exits the PBX. Perhaps the user entered a common or well-known 4 or 5-digit extension for that number that needs to be dialed. As that number comes in on the trunk, we can perform normalization to actually bring that into a E.164 format so we know what the actual endpoint or destination of that call would be. Once that call's inside of Link, we realize where it's headed to, right? The Redmond PBX. We might realize we have to do some calling number translation as well. Perhaps the number came inbound with just the 4-digit extension of the user dialing it. We want to translate that back to E.164 so we can resolve it back to the actual user who was placing the call from their PBX or desk phone. So in this case, we're modifying again both the called number and the calling number to provide that caller ID capability. The final change is the concept of providing additional information in the SIP headers when calls egress the link environment towards the PSTN. In some cases, we would provide a capability known as P-asserted identity in Link Server 2010. One example would be the you have a conference call established and you want to invite a PSTN number into that conference. With OCS 2007, R2, and prior, we weren't sending any calling party information out because the calling party was the AV MCU hosting the conference. With Link 2010, we realized, maybe we should send some information. Let's take the person who's doing the invite, right, and take their phone number and use that as the calling number when presenting that on caller ID or the P-asserted identity when that number is leaving Link and going off to that PSTN or mobile user. The additional header information that we provide now as well is something called referred by, and here it comes again, referred by and the history info. The three of these, in essence, ensure that when calls flow through, especially in a call forwarding and a simul ring type scenario, and or simul ring, the destination party is aware of the actual original caller's caller ID, right? So we want to pass through that original caller's caller ID as it's exiting Link, so we can show, first of all, that maybe my mobile number called, my wife's mobile number called my work number. My work number is forwarded to my cell phone. What number should show up on the caller ID on my cell phone, right? Do I want to see my wife's caller ID, or do I want to see my extension at the office showing up on my cell phone? In many cases, it's not legal or authorized to send the wife's caller ID as the calling party number. So the calling party number will be my work number, but by putting in the P-asserted identity of your cell phone, the carrier has the option then of allowing that to be shown as the caller ID coming inbound. And so giving the extra information to the carrier allows them to make the caller decision, saying, yes, it actually was coming from Link, but the true original caller was from outside the organization, so we can present that number down for the inbound user. We were in some cases prevented from showing that or from establishing. There were some carriers around the world that required that additional level of information before showing one of those modified caller ID formats. This also has capabilities around billing and chargeback. So we have the option of, by using these, right, and showing it in the call detail records, we can see who the original person that caused that call to go outbound was by tracking both the called number and the original calling from number that sponsored that call. We mentioned probably two or three times in the earlier slides, we talked about this in the architecture session. The other benefit or enhancement is a concept of a response group manager role in RBAC. In its essence, this is a way to delegate out the management of a specific workflow or workflows and those associated agents or agent groups. Today, with Link 2010, the Link server admin is the one responsible for carving up workflows, provisioning agents and agent groups. As those business units that have those capabilities, one changes, they're constantly coming back to the Link team. This brings up a kind of a side session, or a side topic of conversation. We developed the concept of response groups in Link Server 2010, but we didn't really expect wide adoption of them. They're relatively limited in what they can do compared to an actual call center solution. Call centers have a lot of niche or kind of vertical knowledge around what's possible and capable from both a reporting and auditing capability, as well as from features such as manager barge-in and some of the auditing and other capabilities there. Response groups are kind of a team call with a couple more options, right? So like some business hours and holidays, and maybe some very basic workflow of press one and press two to route to different departments or to different groupings of agents being able to answer the phone. What we didn't expect was that customers would actually go and deploy, in some cases, literally thousands of these. It turns out that the response group service is relatively widely deployed across our customer base. And so the expectation was this would be kind of a small subset of folks. But because we saw this wider deployment, there's been a lot of demand also then for, since we have so many response groups, we want to be able to push the minor changes inside of a response group back to a person in the business who's managing those agent and agent groups associated with it. Now the manager can do things such as monitor those queues, right, change the workflow, the associated agents in that workflow, welcome messages, business hours, holiday hours, all that sort of routine level stuff that might be associated with that specific workflow. They can also delegate that down to additional managers, right, if they want to have more than one person responsible for or working with it. It does come with some restrictions, and so this essentially means that we have two types of response groups going forward. There are response groups that are managed, meaning that they are delegated out to an end user in that business segment, and there are response groups that are unmanaged, which are managed by the Link administrator. And the reason for this differentiation, so by looking right, here's a quick list on the table here, it's easier to see in this slide. Whenever we have a managed response group, that manager can manage the workflow, the queues, and the agent groups only for their specific workflow or response group itself. The second light-colored blue box, right, is managed by a different manager. So the manager, two, is not able to modify the queues or agent groups for workflow one. Manager from workflow one is not able to modify, add, or use the agents and queues in work group two. Neither of the two on the left are able to work with any of the unmanaged workflows, agent groups, and agents, right? So anytime we delegate that out, that delegation applies in that little narrow scope pyramid of what that response group administrator and their specific workflow and response group are associated to. Anytime we have unmanaged ones, all those can be assembled in any way you like, right? So the Link administrator can very easily create multiple workflows. He can have workflow one talking to agent groups that are part of workflow two and or vice versa and or groups. So when carving out your response group manager capabilities, you have to do some fine tuning of who's going to be responsible for the different agent and agent groups, define them up front, then push a delegation out. They're then able to remove people, add people to those queues, manage the workflow, business hours, holiday hours, other capabilities around that. So that pushes that or offloads a task from the Link administrator, freeing you up for things like session management, troubleshooting, other aspects around Link server administration. The final one, I think it's one of the final ones, is around some changes for call forwarding and SIMO ring. Another request that we've had is okay, users may be authorized to dial national or international, for example, from a direct dialing perspective, but I don't want them to do simul-ring or call forwarding to a national or international number. They should only be able to do call forwarding or simul-ring to their local area or their local exchange, for example. In Link 2010, this was not possible. If you had capabilities to dial internationally, you could also do call forwarding or simul-ring internationally. Every time I travel, for example, I buy a SIM card in that country, I then forward my Link number to that that local card, right? Folks in the U.S. call the local number. They're able to ring my number locally, and they don't have to remember or keep track of what that local number is, and I don't have to pay AT&T some ungodly per-minute charge for international roaming. However, with this, we can now block that type of behavior. So users are part of a voice policy. In this case, we see voice policy Redmond, but we detect the difference in call types. So if the user is placing a normal call, it's going to go through their normal PSTN usages and their normal authorization path or pattern. If that call is actually detected to be a call forward or simul ring, we pick up that it's a different type, right? And then move over to a different set of voice policy usages associated for that specific use case. In this case, call forwarding and simul-ring includes only internal and custom usages, and so only numbers that are part of that internal or custom usages pattern match will be allowed for the user to do simul-ring or call forwarding. So in essence, a way of restricting or providing some restrictive capabilities around the call forwarding and simul-ring scenarios. All right, so with that, let's give a welcome to Mr. Don, who's been our provider and sponsor of all those headsets, who will give us a little quick overview of some of the Plantronics options, and we'll get a demo of his DECT headset and some of the capabilities there.
I'll do some of that. Thanks, Andrew.
You're welcome.
So I just want to run through with a couple of things. Andrew's talked a lot about what voice changes are coming in 2013. At the infrastructure end, Plantronics, we obviously focus on what you do at the end user audio device. And to start with, I want to just spend a little bit of time updating you or talking to you about why is it really important as you're deploying Link into your infrastructure to be choosing devices that are Link optimized. Now, this can refer to headsets, this can refer to webcams, this can refer to desk phones, to speaker phones, but why is Link optimized important? And the important point of it comes around how devices, and specifically USB devices, enumerate into Windows. So you take a standard USB headset, and when it enumerates into Windows, it actually enumerates as two devices. It appears into Windows as an X201 microphone, and it appears as X301, a pair of speakers. And Windows looks at it and goes, oh, well, that's going to become my default device, and every bit of audio off of the Windows platform is going to go to, if it's a mail alert, it's going to go to the X301 device. So someone puts their headset on, or they've got a speakerphone, and all they hear is their mouse clicks, and they hear email alerts and stuff like that. And in an end-user voice scenario, that becomes really, really annoying. So what we have to do as hardware vendors is run through a testing process, submit our devices to Microsoft to come out with devices that are optimized for Link. The core difference that drives is inside of Windows, they enumerate specifically as different sorts of devices. So a handset will identify itself as an X401 device. A headset will come in as an X402 as a headset. Now, where that kind of folds out, and if I can just quickly get over here.
Switch two.
Yep.
Is that one?
This is two. Is when you go into Windows and you plug this device in, this device is going to start to appear as the default communication device, and your default audio device is going to stay as your PC speakers, for example. So if I take down, have a look at my playback devices, you see there that the Savvy 700, which we've got sitting up on the deck here, is sitting as the default communications device. Inside of Link 2010 that I've got here, that's going to pop up as the Plantronics headset. All of the other audio devices, all of the other audio routing, when you're on three, is going to stay on the PC speakers and microphone. Okay. I have seen customers who've deployed Link-optimized headsets and they've gone and put in a non-link optimized webcam. What do webcams generally have in them besides a camera? A microphone. That microphone owned all audio transmission off of that PC. And they complained that link web conferences were crap. Why? Because they had an X201 device that was trying to own everything. What we have to do as vendors is ensure there's no drivers you load, so it's straight plug and play. Okay? There's some areas around if you're doing streaming media and a call comes in and you answer that call, we need to volume down the streaming media and let the default, the voice communication take place. When that finishes, ramp the volume back up. Some of us, as we've done at Plantronics, will take that a step further and work at how we actually pause the streaming media. Okay? So I just wanted to touch on really, really important as you're looking at what you're doing for your end users, what we call the last meter. So my PC's over there, my headset's here. What are they actually doing around the last meter? In line with that is to understand as you start to deploy link, is to be looking for devices that support wideband audio or HD voice to your users. The reason for that is the clarity and crispness of the conversation that that will give them. Narrowband, which is like what you're talking on a standard mobile phone, you're going to be getting, you know, 300 up to 3.4 kilohertz of sampling. You go out to wideband audio, that doubles. In the same 64K sample that it takes, you're going up to about 7.1 kilohertz is where the sampling range comes from. And that really means that your end users, as they're talking to other people in your link environment, they will prefer to drive voice communications over that because it will sound like you're having a face-to-face conversation, not a conversation down the end of the tunnel. Okay? We see this as being important from a Plantronics perspective, having done headsets for over 50 years now, and we see a convergence of scenarios taking place. One is around what your organisations are doing from hot desking, remote working, hoteling, whatever you want to call it, in terms of the changed work environment, and what's happening from the type of communication that's being unified. And all of that folds together for how do we provide devices that provide you really crisp, clear audio, but also do a lot of work around noise cancelling, etc. And so as we're working with customers around this, we start to look at user profiles inside of an organisation, not a one-size-fits-all scenario. And as you're looking at what you're doing in terms of PABX integration or transition for a PABX, start to look at what the profiles of user are, what their audio usage is inside of an organisation, and then to fit the audio device to them. It may be that the office workers retain a desk phone configuration for them, but some of the execs and mobile professionals start to look at what are some of the flexible audio devices that can be provided for them on that. And we will then lay over what our headsets sit on top of that. I'm not going to go into that. You can come and see us on the stand if you want to talk more about those. One of the elements, and I'm just going to flick back over to my device, that we have to do as part of a link optimized scenario is that I'm going to screen lock my PC. Okay? And I'm going to take my headset and I'm going to get Andrew to give me a call via link. So my PC, as you can see, is screen locked. He's going to give me a call. We have to be able to drive call answer from the headset. Okay. As a user, I don't want to have to go back, answer my call by unlocking my PC. So I'm going to put that
correct.
On.
So I'm showing we can see that Don here is away, right? We know that when we lock the screen, he shows up as away. So let's go ahead and give him a call. He's not really away. Well, let's try calling Don.
We have to do LED signaling on the device to be link optimized. I'm going to press
to hang up, and I'm going to bugger off because I'm on a deck device and run a long way away.
Quickly before we get the feedback, right?
The devices that give them a high level of mobility, even though the last meter of the device is sitting way up there. Okay. The other thing that we'll enable you to do is, I'm going to hang that up because we're getting a bit of loop back, enable you to mix different audio sources to them as well. But given the time, I guess for me, working in the link space was really to highlight that link optimized scenario. As you're looking at it, what does it deliver, how do you drive it, and what are the sorts of different scenarios you can provide for your users. And so with that, Andrew.
Excellent.
I'll hand back over to you. And pick up some freebies.
Hey. Let's get out of here. I was going to show if I can find it quickly on my computer here. There's another aspect to the, Don mentioned the concept of USB and USB drivers. What we found at Microsoft is that quality of the driver actually has a significant impact on call quality also. Poorly written USB devices don't necessarily get the CPU attention or might grab the CPU attention not as required. And this doesn't necessarily be something that you hear at your side, but what's heard at the other side. So what we can do to show this is we have this little tool called Glitch. Glitch is a tool that simulates some bad interrupts, for example, from a poorly written USB device. To look at Glitch, we'll run Glitch. We'll also bring up, if I can right-click and get the taskbar here, task manager. There we go. Now, I haven't run Glitch on Windows 8 before, so I'm not sure what the results will be. Glitch, if I run it too much, will crash my machine, right? If I continue to glitch too bad, I will get an interrupt-driven process that Windows can't recover from. So we're looking at CPU utilization. It's relatively low, but let's go ahead and decrease the time between the glitches. Let me start the stress. Increase the glitch duration, decrease time. And I'm going to try to get my CPU to go here from around 20-30% up to about 70% before I run the call. Actually, before we do that, we'll show you what it normally sounds like. The way we're going to test this is the standard check call quality. This goes ahead and plays a message, right, so I can hear audio streaming to me, records me, and then plays back my recording so I can hear what my outbound audio call sounds like as well. Do we have audio coming from... I'm sending audio. Do you have that turned? You might have turned it down when.
Do we have audio coming from?
Oh yeah, there we go. So it was. Can you turn it up a little bit again? I'll redo the call so these guys can hear it. There we are. So let's do check audio quality.
To check your call quality, record a short message after the tone, then wait to hear how you sound.
Here's a quick capture of some audio quality. This is just Andrew speaking. Let's hear how it sounds.
Here's what I've heard.
Here's a quick capture of some audio quality. This is just Andrew speaking. Let's hear how it sounds. So it sounds pretty normal, right?
If you like what you heard,
we'll go ahead and hang that up. Now let's repeat that as we watch our CPU here go from about 30% up to about 70% with these random interrupts that we're throwing from a bad USB device. So let's decrease time between glitches, increase the glitch duration, and then you can see the cursor is actually starting to lag a little bit here. Let's see how bad that was. What are we averaging now? Not too bad yet. It's kind of dragging, though. I'm always scared running this tool. Pardon?
What's the URL for Glitch? it's an
internal tool a developer wrote, essentially, to run that. Increase.
There you go.
It's starting to. I hope. that's always the problem with the glitch. Is there's a, you're increasing, trying to find that magic tipping point. I can probably go. Wow, it's getting pretty bad. So let's hope it doesn't blue screen here. Let's increase that two more times. And decrease time. Something recovered there for a bit, but it's getting a little worse. Now we're seeing worse. Now let's try that same call again and hear what it sounds like. So let's go ahead and call our audio test service. It's even taken some time to bring that up, as we can see. Audio's coming out.
To check your call quality, record a short message after the tone, then wait to hear how you sound.
Hey, this is Andrew. We're trying that message again now that we've got some errant processor activity occurring.
Here's what I've heard.
Hey.
If you like what you heard, I'm
definitely redlining Glitch because it doesn't usually get that. You usually hear a little bit more staccato. But what that's showing is that in the encoding process, it's very particular that we get that processor time as I'm speaking, right? If we don't get it exactly as I'm speaking, it never gets captured properly. It's never getting sent out properly. Decoding is much simpler. The amount of time, processor time I need for decoding is very easy. So a poorly written USB device, my call sounds great. What are you talking about? The recipient has a very horrid audio experience, right? And so you get that call quality, hey, link, you know, what's this link thing? I really hate the call quality experience. In this case, it's just a poorly written USB device or a poor USB driver, in essence. Thus, another reason for that optimized for link certification program. So let's kill Glitch. And we'll go back in time for some giveaways. So if you haven't done this before, we're looking for the low number here would be 0. The high number is what we're looking for in the room. So we're looking at the registration number on your badge. Anybody over 3,000? What do we got? 3454? Is that the highest number in the room? High number. 3454. We use a little tool in Excel called Rand between, and we'll say between D3 and D4. When I press enter, the person closest to this number wins a prize. 2729. 2744. We're within 15. Oh, wait, actually, 25? Is that within 25?
No, 15.
15? Did I do my math right? All right. It's a lot harder than you think when there's lots of people watching. All right, so we have lucky winner number one.
Number one.
Let's try that again.
There you go.
Ran between. And just as a heads up, there is the Jupiter Hotel and Casino for you lucky winners who feel you can continue the streak. D3 and D4. Lucky winner, wow, it's close, 2506. Yes, what's up with this random number generator? Who wrote this random number generator?
2514.
2514, we're within 8. 24, no, we're over 30 there. Within 8, anybody that's up to, it would be 2498 or 2413, 2513 or lower.
Hold on.
That's it.
Hold on,
sounds like rand between.
And while he's doing that, you'll notice even we have to, on the boxes, put on there optimized for link. Okay, so we try and make it as smooth and easy for you guys.
1989. That was a good year. We're last giveaways. They're saying time's up, so we're walking out of here shortly. 1954? 2025. All right, hold on.
2020?
Oh, I lost 1989, that's what it was. So that's within 36. What was the other number that we had?
99, 54.
1954, is that what I... Oh, 1954. You're not that far off. Wow! Makes it by one, just squeaks by. Is there a mistake? Oh, hold on, we're getting some clear... 2021 is 32, so 2021.
So 2020 is even closer.
Who's got 2021? That's our closest number. Equals ran between.
Last one.
D3, D4. 382, someone who registered early.
What's that?
382.
382.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming out.